In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Sometimes when we dig into an economic issue that we think is relevant, we have no idea just how relevant it really is. A few weeks ago, a couple of listeners got in touch with us at In This Economy, asking us to look at how the heck you can possibly change careers in this economy when every paycheck counts and the idea of going back to school for more skills is so expensive it might as well be out of reach. It turns out those two are not just a couple of listeners. According to a report released this week, they, and most of you, are part of a staggering 71% of Canadians who would like to leave their jobs to look for new careers and better opportunities. So if, as the statistics would suggest, that includes you, here's where and how to start, even in this economy.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, this is Cody, and I have a question for In This Economy.
We love getting voicemails that start like this. Take it away, Cody.
Currently, I'm working a job that is not really considered a green job for the environment, and I have a skill set that I would imagine should be compatible for a more green job. However, when I go to look for a job in the green sector, they all require either 3 to 5 years of experience or certification X, Y, and Z. So what I'm wondering is, how can someone transition into the green technology industry in this economy if it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to get all the training and certification just to do so? Thank you very much, and hope to hear this in a future episode. Bye.
Cody's not the only listener for whom changing careers is top of mind at the moment. Shortly after we received his voicemail, we got an email from a listener named Alan. So we asked Ryan, who is one of our sound designers, to read that one for us.
Hi, TBS team. I have been battling uncertainty about leaving my relatively cozy job for new challenges elsewhere, but have significant concerns about the significant risk it represents. Without going into greater detail, for now, I feel a little trapped in my work situation, much like a tenant who secured a rental before the market skyrocketed. In this economy, how can somebody reasonably decide to leave their good job to explore professional growth in an uncertain economy and seemingly increasingly competitive and insecure employment market? Really enjoy the podcast. Thanks.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and you're listening to In This Economy. It is a show where we try to help you understand the systems behind your money problems. And that includes, as you know by now, everything from grocery bills and heating costs to mortgage payments, apartment hunting, having a kid, and yes, changing careers. In every episode, we hear from a listener who has a financial challenge, and then I bring in an expert who understands that area of the economy intimately. After they offer us some help, in this episode, we have a little treat from someone who has been where our listeners are trying to go, and hopefully, we can all get a sense of what that path looks like. Now, according to a Statistics Canada Labour Force survey, a quarter of Canadians with a university degree will change jobs or return to school at some point in their lives. And according to a survey from business consulting firm Robert Half, the number of Canadians planning to make a career change in the next year is rising. So it's no wonder that we got not one, but two requests to cover this topic at the same time. How can you make sure that you're financially prepared for a pivot? How should you calculate the cost of retraining and, obviously, a potential break between jobs? Not to mention, of course, the risk of a pay cut if you are chasing your dreams and you start over in a field with less experience. To answer all these questions and more, we turn to career counselor Alan Kearns.
So many people have ended up in their career not out of intention. They've ended up in their career out of momentum.
Alan is the founder of a company called CareerJoy. He's worked with a ton of people, helping them navigate the transition into a new career. We started off by just asking him about the main reasons that people feel compelled to make the switch.
I call it the three M's. It's momentum. Then it's me. It's like, oh, I want to have a life that is a better life than I have. So it's not even necessarily what I'm doing. It's like the rest of my life. I want more autonomy, or I want more control, or I want to be able to travel more. I want to work from anywhere. Like, what is it I want from life outside of work? So the me piece, right? And then the third thing is money. I always say that, you know, it's kind of the BS term of, you know, do what you love and the money will follow. That's very attractive in a mantra, but
listen, I work in the media. You don't have to tell me that that's not always true.
Exactly. But there is a reality that as we mature, and usually in our 30s and 40s and 50s, you realize, oh, it does cost money to live, or I'm not really where I hope to be, or it could be more money or less money, by the way, that people realize they're in a situation where they don't need as much money. So it frees up options. Or it could be in a situation where they need more money because they're doing what they love, but the money is not following them. So
does that happen more often now that we are in such a financial crunch in terms of people who are coming through your door these days?
Absolutely. There is just more reality that it costs money to live in Canada, and it's not less expensive, it's more expensive. And so there's more of a practical reality that money matters. You know, I grew up in an immigrant family, so I'm very familiar with the fact that it was always like, okay, that's fine, but how are you going to make a living at that? So I was in a weird kind of way, I grew up in an environment my parents really loved what they did. But also there's always the conversation is, how does that work in the real world? And so that's where that do what you love and money will follow isn't always a truism. There's truth in it, but it's like, well, how does that really work?
How much does it cost, or can it cost? And I imagine it varies. So maybe if you have some examples from different industries, to be willing to change your career, to leave presumably a career you've made some headroads in, and not only retrain yourself for something else, but often I would imagine start lower.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple ways to approach transition in general. A lot of the thinking around this is what I call binary thinking. Like, I'm going to go this, and then I'm going to go do that, and I'm going to have to take a pay cut, and I'm going to have to invest a ton of money, and I'm going to have to leave everything behind and go do something completely different. And I can think of one of our clients who was doing marketing within pharmaceuticals and loved marketing, but had a deep passion for music. And this person realized, there's kind of two options. And you think about transition, there's career revolution, which is I'm going to leave my marketing and I go start up a band. Or there's an evolution that says, you know what? Guess what? Spotify, Sirius, Apple, they all have people in their marketing teams. And you can actually go do something in the marketing area that involves music and it involves, but it isn't such a great leap. So to answer the question, there's two sort of streams you can consider. And I think stream two, the one I just mentioned, the evolution of a career, is how do you use already some of the skills, some of your network, some of the things you already know, and evolve to an organization that is more focused in an area. And that's what I call, so there's talents and passions, right? Your talents is what you do, your passions is what you're interested in. And it's the intersection of that, the talents, passions, and your lifestyle, and really your values. So how does it all align? And so when you evaluate this, it can vary depending. And I think most people, it's better to consider a career evolution where you do something on the side, you integrate it into your life that you have already now. You go to school part-time, you work where you are right now, and you upskill yourself or retrain yourself in the same area. So it can vary depending on if you're evolutionary or revolutionary. That is more uncommon that you're going to take, whatever, 2 or 3 years off or 4 years off and go back to school and completely rejig yourself, Well, that's, you know, you're talking a very significant investment. If you think about the average person is making $60,000 to $80,000 a year, you know, so take a 4-year transition point, you're talking a lot of money if you start adding it up. Like that could be $200,000 to $400,000 of lost income and retraining. That's why we're such an advocate of career evolution, where you're using some of your skills and evolving over time.
Can you give me, I understand that every situation is different here, but if we're going to talk about evolution, and I do want to talk in a moment about people who realize that this entire industry is not for them and they do need to choose a new path. But if you're talking about evolving your career, somebody walks into your office, what do you do with them?
Well, first of all, you have to figure out, I think it what's interesting is, first of all, 58% of Canadians don't enjoy their work situation. That's a big number, 58%. That's like over 10 million people are in the wrong career situation, wrong work situation. So you have to isolate the issue and say, first of all, what is the issue here? You may think you're in the wrong career, but maybe it's the wrong environment. Maybe it's the wrong type of leadership. The first question we have to answer is, what is the core of the issue? Is it a work fit issue or is it a career issue? And those are different questions. So that's where kind of a more comprehensive approach versus let's do a test on you and tell you what color you are, or what personality types you are.
I think people picture that, right? From those career surveys when you were a kid and there's the stuff you always wanted to be and you were hoped you would get. And then it said, no, actually you should be an accountant.
Exactly. Exactly. So if one, there's this, you've got to understand what is it that's not working and why. And the problem slash challenge I see is really understanding yourself and really understanding what it is you're about and what you can do, and really understanding about work environments and your skills and the things we talked about. So I think that's our approach would be, let's look at who you are in a more sophisticated way. Let's really do get some analysis. Then let's start to explore the options in a way that relates to where you're at, not in your dream life, but like, how do you explore those options with a child or a rental property or whatever all it is that you have.
Well, let's talk about it practically then, because I think that's what people are looking for. What do you need to do when you're preparing to switch careers? And, you know, evolving is one thing, but let's say you've decided this industry is not for you, or again, I'm in the media, so I use an example. You look at your industry and you look at the future of it sometimes and you're like, do I see myself here 15, 20 years down? Do I see this industry being healthy? I think we have callers who've called into us and mentioned, you know, I'm in the oil and gas industry. Like these are things that might require a shift. What do you practically do to prepare for that?
Yeah, good question, Jordan. I think the first thing you have to say is, let's look at your situation now, your current lifestyle. What does your support mechanism look like now? If you're in a partnership, what is your partner's thoughts about this transition idea? Because what we've seen is over and over again where a person starts his journey and maybe does it very thoughtfully, but then they don't have a supportive partner or a partner that has different expectations. So if you're in a relationship, I think there needs to be a conversation along the way of what are the options? What are we prepared to do as a partnership? What's the investment look like in this transition? What are the risks attached to it? What are our needs as a family? So the first place you got to look at is you got to look at your ecosystem. And also, it's not even sort of the economics of it. Are you in a partnership that is supportive of you pursuing a different journey? I can think of one of our clients who was in a partnership and their partners basically said, no, you're not doing that. So I always say, we're not a marriage counselor. So that's a different story. So I think you got to look at, first of all, your current life circumstances. And then you start to look at, what are the economics of your situation? What are the realities of what your needs are? And what would be a runway of those types of things? What are we working with here? Then we can start to run through options of what I can do. Listen, if you have a trust fund, that's a whole different conversation. Or if you've done well and you have no debt and now you're in a situation where you need less money to make a transition, then the options become more variable. And so I think you know, working with your financial planner, getting a plan in place that says, okay, if I are going to change income streams, what are my options? And you know, oftentimes people have more resources than they think, but they just don't know what they're starting from.
What do you mean by that? They might have more resources than they think.
Well, you know, they may have equity in their house, or they may have investments or a retirement fund that's still growing healthy and that they can, you know, kind of take a little bit more out for the next few years or not put as much in and still be good 25 years from now. So we have often this short-term thinking of like, oh, if I touch my retirement thing, I'm really going to be screwed, which, you may be. But in a lot of cases, you know, retirement portfolios evolve and grow over time, and people just don't have a picture of that. So I think that's where you work with your partner, but also your financial advisor, if you have a financial advisor, to look at that and then start to say, okay, this is the starting point. Also, the third thing I would say, you're not making the decision to change careers right then and there. Making a decision is to explore what the options could be and what your paths could be. And I think this, like, I need to make a decision thing is very dangerous because it puts you into this pressure of, like, got to make the right decision, the perfect decision. Like, often people, I can think of a client coming early on and saying, I need to find the perfect career. And I remember one of our consultants saying in a meeting we were at, and saying, well, I told the client, I said, well, you're in the wrong place. And the client said, what do you mean? You guys have an excellent reputation. I've heard great works. You've helped a bunch of my friends. I said, but there's no such thing as the perfect career. So that comes back to the expectations, right?
What about for people who don't have those resources that you just spoke of? I mean, we have a lot of listeners who are, working, maybe not quite paycheck to paycheck, but certainly don't have equity built up in a house. And as you mentioned, you know, it's tough to take a couple $100,000 to go back to school. How do you change careers on a budget without wrecking your finances?
Well, then I think this is where the career evolution piece is. So if somebody says, I'm in the oil and gas industry, maybe it's not aligned with my value systems, am I making a good living? So then how do you start to say, okay, how do I maybe in that case look at the green economy and use my skills in a different area and upskill myself? So that comes back to the career evolution. And then there's government funding in some areas. You look at Second Career Ontario and other across the Canada, other kind of government supportive environments that can help people going back to school and retraining. So there's some programs out there that I would say that they're fairly limited, but they're there. And the point is that the evolution piece that says maybe you say in the next 24 months or 36 months, I'm going to be evolving towards that. And I think that's when you have more limited resources, then you need to be more creative. The other thing is, we haven't talked about this, but you know, there's many examples of people who are in an area and see they're an area you're passionate about and see a need in that area, and they're entrepreneurs and they start to create something, you know, their side gig, and their side gig becomes all of a sudden something that meets not just their need, but 10,000 people's needs or 100,000 people's needs or 5,000 people. And so I think also the entrepreneurial stream, where in many cases now, it's never been easier to start something with very low amount of money and a lot of sweat equity and all kinds of platforms out there that can enable you to grow something, that you need your laptop and a cell phone and some hard work to get something off the ground. So that's the entrepreneurial journey is often another way that we've seen many, many people transition over time and with their side gig.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
How do you go about figuring out, and let's use the oil and gas to green jobs, not only because it's relevant to our listener, but because I think it's a good example of industries that are switching overall.
Yeah.
How do you figure out where to evolve and what kind of resources are out there? Like, I assume that there are retraining programs. Like, are there ways to do this without like going back to school?
Yeah, there are. I think that's where you sort of look at, you know, emerging growth industries are often sponsored by the industry itself. So you start to say, what areas are evolving in this new area? I'm thinking like green energy. What are the different entry points into that? So again, using an example, if you're a marketing person in oil and gas, how would you move to marketing in batteries? How do your finance? Or there's all those kind of skills that are more generalized skills. And or if you're a technical skill, then how do you sort of say, okay, what kind of skills could be used over in the battery industry or in the things that are supporting the emerging things? And the other thing too is, the question is, how do I know there are going to be jobs there? So that's an obvious question, right? Right. The old jobs question. I say, well, there's some patterns you pay attention to economically, what's growing and where it's growing. And then saying, you know what, you don't have to find a job in the entire market ecosystem. You just need to find the right role in the right area. And I think it takes away the pressure of the one and only.
What do you do to prepare for a new career that may be more emotionally, morally rewarding for you, but not as financially rewarding? And how do you plan for that shift, and what can you do to mitigate it?
Yeah, I think it comes back to some of the things about budget. So one, even before money, is why do you want to do this? And I think it's like any change in your life. There's a great book called Change or Die, and it looks at, like, you know, people who've had a heart attack, and, you know, 87% of people 2 years post heart attack don't change. They're back to the same lifestyle they had. And it looked at why the 13% changed. And it realizing that the reason that 13% of people changed their lifestyle, or in this case, changing roles, is because they identified a positive reason to change. They were really anchored with, I want to live longer because I have a granddaughter being born, or whatever it might be. And so I think the first thing around this, preparing for this, is a really clear benefit to you in changing. What is your why? And it has to be more than just economic. It has to be for certain reasons, that you have a reason to do that. And then second of all, you start to look at the resources you have and the piece of the puzzle you need, and start to build a plan. I think that the why and the plan are really key. And I think the other thing is you have to be prepared for is the unknown. And the one things I admire about American culture is the risk-taking. One of the things that frustrates me at the Canadian culture is our risk-taking. That we are a culture that tends to like predictability. I think that's one of the reasons why Tim Hortons has done so well, by the way. I always say it's very average coffee, yep. Consistently average, right? And so I think this is the other thing, is like you have to be prepared to take some risk. And transition, like anything in our life, can be challenging. But I always say change is not hard. The decision to change can be hard. But once you start changing, it actually is easier than you think. But that doesn't mean there are hard moments in it.
Here's the last thing then that I want to ask you, because you led me right into it. It is a risk, and maybe we should be more comfortable with risk in Canada in general. How can people take a risk right now, specifically when you look around at the financial climate? I mean, that's one of the reasons we're doing this show, right? The title of this episode is going to be like, change careers in this economy?
Are you crazy?
It can feel, are you crazy? It can feel, if it felt risky before, now it can feel like genuinely hazardous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think to answer the question around the opportunities in front of us, it's never been more risky to play it safe. Let me say that again. It's never been more risky to play it safe. You cannot play it safe. The economy, the elements of this we're dealing with, there's so many more variables in so many areas. And I'm talking about every single sector, by the way. And if you're in the bottom 80 percentile of your industry, you're very, very vulnerable, the bottom 80%. So how do you get to the top 20 percentile of any industry? And I think that's what we have to understand, is that it seems like not doing something is safe. What I would argue, if you're not in the right career situation, you're not thriving in it, you're not doing your best work, you're not, then you're really at risk of restructuring at the industry and you're a part of changing, because there's going to change. It's going to change whether you change or not. And I think the ownership of understanding what is risk, and we have a mindset that, you know, that changing something is risky and not changing something is safe. And I would say that no, the economy is changing and every single area is changing. And, you know, ChatGPT is having impact on all kinds of things. And so is globalization, all these kinds of things. And they're also creating tremendous opportunities. But I think reality is, you know, understand that our ability to deal with change and adapt is the only thing that will protect us. And I think you need to find an area. So this is the other thing I would say, is if you're not in the top 20 percentile of what you're doing, and you can't be there sustainably unless it's the right fit for you, then you are incredibly at risk. And I think it's either those that are going to change and move towards something that's a better fit for them, where they can really be in the top 20 percentile, really thrive and really contribute and really build a brand for themselves. That's where security and safety lies. And by the way, you know, one of the reasons I do this work, and we do this work with our corporate clients and individual clients, is because work matters. Mm-hmm. It matters to our quality of life. It matters to our health. It matters to our relationships. It matters to us as parents. It matters to us economically. And there's just so little foresight and really good thought around work. I really think that it comes back to your very first question, that most people have not done good thinking and do good planning at work. So I think it's a real opportunity for people to kind of mature in that and own that and say, where do I want to go and how do I get there? And I'm going to have the courage to make the right decisions, but do that in a way that's what your listeners are thinking about. What's a smart way to doing this? Not just throwing it to do what you love and the money will follow.
Alan, thank you so much for this. It's really insightful and hopefully give some people the courage to take a leap.
Thanks, Jordan.
That was Alan Kearns. He's a career counselor and the founder of Career Joy. Now, we usually end this show with me riffing on some tips and some takeaways, but in this case, we thought it might be more helpful to share a real-life example that offers both our career change curious listeners a roadmap for what's possible.
I started out as a chemical engineer working in Fort McMurray, Alberta.
That's Lizzie. Lizzie liked her job just fine. And the pay was great. As an engineer in the oil sands, she was making a six-figure salary. But it was definitely one of those ones that's a job, not a calling.
It was something that I did, not maybe out of passion, just out of like interest and out of skills, because I'm a bit of a mathy, sciencey nerd. But I found what I was spending most of my time doing was working with our church's youth group. And eventually I found myself leading the youth group. And when I was leading the youth group, I found out that that was where I was most passionate. That's where I was most happy. That's where I felt the most fulfilled, was just working with and hanging out with and loving kids. It started as a few hours a week volunteer position, and it grew and grew and grew as I took on more of a leadership role. I was spending time meeting some of the kids for like coffee breaks outside of school and things like that, or meeting with other volunteers who worked with the youth group and doing training with them, planning our curriculum and stuff. And it got to the point where I was doing about 25 hours a week of work for the youth group on top of my 9-to-5 job. It was tiring in the sense that I was a little bit overcommitted time-wise, but I just loved so much the work that I was doing with the youth group. And so that was where I sort of started to wonder if maybe youth ministry was more what I was meant to be doing with my life than, engineering, because I didn't get home and think, oh man, I want to do more engineering. But I got home and thought, okay, what can I do to plan the next thing for the youth group? And so it was kind of always on my mind.
Lizzie realized it was time to make a choice.
And so I chose to walk away from engineering, and I did a master's program to get some more education. And then I pursued full-time and part-time ministry as a children's and youth pastor.
A lot of the stuff that Alan just talked to us about, it came up as Lizzie tried to make her decision.
I was dating my now husband at the time, and I said to him, you know, like, I'm really wrestling with this idea of like, do I stay? Do I leave? Like, what's the right decision? And he basically said to me, like, if you were making $15 an hour as an engineer right now, would this be a hard decision? And I said, no. And he said, so your decision to stay is because of the money. And I think you need to follow your passion. And so I said, okay. And I submitted my letter of resignation that week.
Alan told us about the importance of having a good support system and a partner who's on board with your decision. And Lizzie had that, which is good because she was facing a pretty major pay cut, not to mention the additional expenses of going back to school.
I've always been a fairly frugal person, and my parents instilled like, save your money, don't get into debt at a very early age. So even going into my bachelor's degree, I had saved up for it, and I only had a little bit of student debt when I graduated, which I had paid off within a year of starting work. And so I did have a decent chunk of savings. It was enough to cover my tuition and my book costs and things like that. And it was enough to cover like a few months of living costs, but not the entire cost.
Around this time, Lizzie and her boyfriend got married and moved in together. And together, they made some sacrifices so that Lizzie could follow her passion.
He was making, I want to say like a third of what I had been making as an engineer in Fort McMurray. And so that was a huge cut in our salaries. But for me, school, I think it was about between $25,000 and $27,000 all in with the books and tuition and everything. So that was a pretty big cost. And then I did my program entirely online. So that helped a huge amount with how we managed it. I looked specifically for a school that offered the program entirely online, so I didn't have to travel. So I sold my car, and that helped with the costs. And then we actually moved. We went from like larger apartments. We both got rid of our apartments, and we ended up moving into like a tiny little basement apartment that basically just had two little bedrooms and a little kitchenette area. So we both downgraded in order to afford having me do this, but it was for a short season and it worked out really well for us. And so it was a good decision in the long run to have to dial back for a little bit.
Budgeting and planning played a huge role.
Got really frugal at managing meals and things like that. Like, we had slow cooker meals pretty much every single day, and lots of rice and lots of pasta and cheap foods and stuff. And then we kind of splurged on the vegetables and stuff.
The decision to change careers had a lasting impact on Lizzie and her husband. But despite the pay cut, she says it's very much been worth it.
We live in a society that is often very focused on like what you have and like what position or title you have. But those things can be really empty things and leave you really unfulfilled. And so what my husband and I have really focused on is trying to be happy, having less things, but be more fulfilled in the roles that we do. I mean, if you spend 8 hours a day, 5 days a week at your job, finding a job that you really love and that allows you to feel like you're adding something back to the world, even if it's in a small way, is worth more to us than having a really fancy car, a really fancy house, a really fancy whatever. And so that was the choice that we made, is that we're gonna wear secondhand clothes and eat, you know, cuts of meat that require 8 hours in a slow cooker in order to be edible. But that means that we get to really love the jobs that we do. And so I would say it was totally worth it. It's a sacrifice to be sure, but it's a sacrifice that was really worth it for us.
Thanks to Alan Kearns for sharing his expert knowledge with us. You can find more information about Alan and what he does by visiting careerjoy.com. Thank you to Cody and Alan, a different Alan, for calling in and writing in to the show with your questions. And special thanks to Lizzie for showing us that it's possible and sharing her story about her own career change. Now, if you have a money problem, you know that we want to hear from you. You can email us at hello@itepod.ca. You can call us and just talk to us. Well, you're not talking to us. You're talking to the voicemail, but you can leave us all the details, everything we need to know, everything you're wondering about. And you got to make sure that you leave us your name. It doesn't have to be your real name. Your number or your email address. It does, in fact, have to be your real number or your real email address, or you will never hear from us. You can do that by calling us at 416-935-5935. You can also, if you're so inclined, follow us on social media. We are on Instagram and on TikTok at In This Economy Pod. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, if you like this show, if you want more of this show, if you want us to stick around, you can do so by helping us get the word out. That means rating and reviewing this show in your favorite podcast app. It also means just sending the show to people you know who might or might not have money problems, who might learn something from it, who might just enjoy it, and telling them that, hey, you think this is pretty good. We'd be very appreciative if you did that. I am your host and executive producer, Jordan Heath Rawlings. This episode was written and produced by Allison Broverman and Stephanie Phillips. Sound design was done by Robin Edgar. Mary Jubrin is our digital editor. Diana Kay is our manager of business development. And all together, we make up the Frequency Podcast Network, which is a division of Rogers. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next time on In This Economy.